We want to welcome everyone joining us by television. Great to have you with us here at Springs Church. And we're on a new series. Well, we're in the middle of it. And we're talking about I Believe in Love. So today I'm going to talk about a skill. Now, this skill is the skill that I think so many, you know, before we had a lot more pastors on staff, I did all the counseling. And then one by one, more and more pastors, the pastoral team grew, so I didn't have to do that. But when you counsel with people, when I look back at the years of counseling with married couples, this one skill that I'm going to teach you today, I would say is predominantly it exists in every marriage out there. And if you want a marriage that's going to be strong, if you want a marriage that can make it through, and not just in marriage, but whatever love relationship you've got, mother to daughter, mother-in-law, friends, etc., you've got to understand how to do this correctly. So today we're going to talk about judging somebody you love. Judging someone you love. Pastor, I thought that we're not supposed to judge people. You're right. But then if, you know, the Christians are famous for every mile of truth, we've got 2 miles of ditch. So if you love your little 2- and 3-year-old daughters, do you allow anyone to babysit them? Some party guy down the block comes and says, hey, I'd love to make some money, babe. Can I babysit your kids for you? Well, no, but Leon, you can't judge him. So what, you let him? Or is there some kind of system that we should use to judge this guy before we let a pedophile, drug habit, he passes out, you're going to let him babysit? No, you're not going to let him babysit your little girls. You're going to have to do an assessment on this guy. What's his track record? What's his training? What's he like? Does he do drugs? Has he got any sexual addictions or issues? You're going to want to know all that stuff. Should you? Absolutely. Is it your right to know? Absolutely. So there are things that we need to be discerning of. And sorry, but over the years, Christians can be some of the most naive people, and the pain in their lives is because they make foolish judgments based on biblical teaching like, we don't judge. Oh, you'd like to take my life savings and invest it? Oh, he seems like a great guy. And they give him, I've seen millions of dollars just in our church in the last 20 years I've been here that have gone to some guy who's going to invest your money for you and make you a nest egg. And when it all happens, I say to the guy, don't you think it was a hint when he drove up to your house in an old Datsun held together by wire and duct tape, and he lives in someone's backyard in a truck camper? You don't think that was a hint that maybe he shouldn't be handling your money if that's as far as he's got with his money? Well, I just didn't want to judge him. That's ridiculous. Okay, so before I get into this and someone goes on a tangent with it, the Bible very clearly says that we are to judge people by their fruits. We are to look at the fruit in their life. When you look at a tree, what kind of fruit is it bearing? If it's lemons, it's a lemon tree. If it's crab apples, it's a crab apple tree. If it's not bearing fruit, it's not bearing fruit. Okay, if it's all sour, it's a sour tree. So we are, now the word fruits could be used track record. We are to look at someone's track record. You say, well, really? Yeah, if you're going to hire somebody for your company, and let's say you've got 3 or 4 employees and someone says to you, hey, I'm starting to go to Springs and I want to be a blessing at Springs. Hire me. I love Jesus. A tear comes down his eye and I'd love to work for you. We're going to believe God for prosperity and blessing. And you go, oh, this guy's a great guy at heart, and you hire him. Herein is why so many Christian businesses go down the tubes, because you're not supposed to just hire people. You're supposed to do a track record. You want to know their history of who they worked for. They could have worked for 14 companies, literally been fired from 13 of them, and then personally sued 12 of them, and you really want to hire that? Well, you know, I just felt like he had a tear in his eye when he talked about Jesus and Springs, so I just thought, hey, felt good about it in my heart, you know. You're not supposed to be judging people even positively. What do you mean? Well, let's say your 16-year-old daughter comes home and she goes, Dad, just relax until I finish the story, but I just met this guy. Wow, he's an amazing guy, Dad. He's only 39. And and he's been in jail, but he's really a good guy at heart. Now, he has had three girlfriends and he's had kids with each one, but dad, don't judge him. He's really a good guy at heart. Yes, I know he owes the Hells Angels some drug money, and he used to be a pusher. But dad, he's been in jail. But dad, he's really a good guy at heart. Okay, that's a ridiculous thing to do. Why? Because you're judging someone positively. The Bible doesn't say to judge someone's heart negatively or positively. It says only God knows the heart. Therefore, you're to leave the heart alone, but you are to look at the track record. You're to look at the fruit that this life is bearing, and you have a right to look at that. Let me unpack some of this. I hope it'll help you out, because I'm going to go to your marriage and I'm going to show you why most marriages that are shut down and plateaued, it'll be because of this. So it'll show up sexually, it'll show up friends, it'll show up with money, it'll show up with I don't love them anymore. It'll show up in a lot of different ways, but the symptoms will all come down to that when you judge someone's heart, you enter the zone of suffering. And when you judge someone's heart, which is their motives, their intentions, they feel it. And when they feel it, they feel condemned. They feel shame. They feel this condemnation. And that relationship is not a happy one for them. It's not an enjoyable one, which is why so many people go through so many friends, relationships, etc., because if the relationship doesn't know how to encourage each other to change and grow, you will literally judge that relationship into a zone of being locked away. In Hebrews 5:14, it says, "But solid food is for full-grown men whose senses and mental faculties are trained by practice to discriminate." Is that up on the big screen? Guys, can I get that please put up on the screen? I thought you were going to just kind of follow me with that. Hebrews 5:14. Thank you. Hebrews 5:14. "But solid food is for full-grown men, for those whose senses and mental faculties are trained by practice to discriminate and to judge, distinguish between what is morally good, noble, what is evil and contrary, either to divine or human law." The word here to discriminate is to judge or discern. So there is a ton of verses in the Bible all through the book of Proverbs that teaches us to learn to discern, to learn to judge the person that's walking into your life. But what do you judge? The fruit of their life, what they're presenting, and their track record. So if it's a dating relationship and you're going to get married after dating him for 3 weeks and you think you know him because God's revealed his heart to you, you're mistaken. God doesn't reveal people's hearts to you. Only God knows our heart, and there's a ton of verses that say that. He says to judge people by their fruits. By their fruits, you'll actually know them. So you can look at their track record. You can look. And now, if a person has got a really messed up life and they want a fresh start, the church gives it to them. Jesus gives it to them. If someone says, "Hey, pastor, I've messed up every relationship, every financial job, I've messed up everything in my life, my own health, my addictions, I'm a mess." Welcome to Springs. It's so great to have you here. You know, here is where we laugh, L-A-F. We love you, we accept you, and we forgive you. No, you won't be working in the kids' ministry. Okay? Because one of your addictions is sexual. So it just, no, why even tempt you? So it's love, accept, forgive doesn't mean we just let you do it. Oh, you were in jail for embezzling money. You've always stolen money. You know what? Let's put you in the accounting office. Why would we up the temptation? We're not. So I'm being facetious a little bit just to show you that the church is the place people need to be able to come when their lives are hurt and broken and they've failed, etc. Absolutely. But I'm not talking now about the church. Now I'm talking about your relationships, who you're married to, who you want to get married to, your teenage boy that you can't seem to connect with, your teenage girl that's doing her own thing and you don't even have a relationship anymore. One of the things that takes place is that we begin to judge the heart. Whenever you use the word heart in the Bible, the Amplified will call it the motives. the intentions of that person. We are to look at the actions. A good example would be, you know, when you want your little son or daughter to stop lying and you're really irritated because they're lying to you. And so you look at them and go, you liar. You know liars go to hell. Okay, let's just examine what you just said. Because most of our families were raised like this, okay? And we want to really get the sin out of these kids, so we want to say things strong. Okay, you are, because he has lied, you are calling him a liar. So, Leon, that's just semantics. Just a minute. The heart is the seat of your identity. Your subconscious, your heart, the Bible calls it, is where your identity, it's how you see yourself. It's what you believe yourself to be. And so if that parent has a behavioral problem with a child that is lying, for example, you've got to be able to deal with that issue without touching or reinforcing demonic strongholds that calls them a liar. You are a liar. And so those words make that their identity. We want them to, your identity when you give your life to Jesus Christ is saved, born again, filled with the presence of God, overcomer, do all things through Christ. And so your identity is with Christ. This behavior issue, this addiction, this thing that you're doing, this is not you, sweetie. That's how you talk to him. You know, hey, little Leon, this is not you. I don't want to use a name because people always get offended when I use their name. You know, this is not you. You are made in God's likeness and image. You're a brave little guy. You're a hero of the faith. God's word is in you. You're designed for great things. Lying, that's not you. So just stop doing that. That's how I would talk to a child to get them to stop doing something. I wouldn't say, well, I don't even want to mention it because I don't want to hurt him. No. You know, the psychologists that are out there, you know, have you ever read some of the books on raising kids by some of these psychologists who've never had kids, but they've got a whole theory on it? Kind of go, yeah, right. The Bible is amazing. So another example before I get into some of my scriptures would be like this. I've used this example a lot because it's an excellent example. If the service is done and I exit down this aisle, so I shake everybody on the outside's hand as I'm walking down, hey. But about 9 rows back, the guy puts his hand out and I just walk around him and shake the next hand. So I shake everybody's hand who's on the end of this row all the way back, except for the guy in the 9th row. Now he goes home to his wife and his friends. What's he going to say? Well, he's got a choice. He's got one of 2 choices. He is going to judge me on that because it's just too much of a faux pas in our culture to walk around somebody whose hand is out and not shake their hand. So he's got one of 2 choices. He simply will judge my actions. Hey, sweetie, yeah, I was sitting there today. Leon could walk right by, didn't even shake my hand, and I don't know if he didn't see me or what. Now you're just looking at what happened. Or you can go, baby, I'm not going to Springs no more. Why not, sweetie? That man thinks he's better than me. How do you know that? Did he say that? Nope. He shook the people in front of me, all 8 of their hands. I put my hand out. He walked right around me. Why wouldn't a person shake a hand that's... He walked right past me. You know what? I'll bet you he thinks he's better than me, but I'll bet he's heard some of those lies about me. He's a gossip too. He thinks he's better than me, and he's a gossip. You know, I wonder if it isn't because I'm short. I'll bet you he's a gossip. I'll bet you he thinks he's better, and he doesn't like short people. I'll bet that's what it is. And now he's got 3 things that he's judged my heart on, but the more he thinks on it, then he goes, you know what? A guy that would do that has probably got sin in his life. I'll bet you he thinks he's better than me. He doesn't like short guys. He's a gossip, and he's got sin in his life. Or he would. You see how it just builds? Now, the mistake that he made was to judge and ask the question, why? If he tells his wife, hey, Leon didn't shake my hand. Don't know what's happened there. Maybe I'll ask him next week when I go back. That would be the best way to do it. Doesn't realize that sometimes when you walk on off the pulpit, these bright lights, they literally make stars in your eyes. Your brain gets addled from trying to speak for 30 minutes straight without dropping the ball. And I'm just like a basket case usually when I walk off, and I'm just kind of shaking hands, and I don't even see half the people. That would probably be the realistic thing. But the second he asks the question, why? Why? Now, the second you ask the question, why, you're looking at my motives. What was Leon's motive for not shaking my hand? What was his intention? Why did he avoid my hand? Now, for you married couples, you do this to each other all the time. I wonder. You see, when you start thinking too much, you always go to why. So yeah, you know, been looking at my marriage. My husband used to come home, pick me up off my feet, twirl me around, kiss me all down my neck, tell me he loved me. He doesn't do that anymore. What's the next question? Why? Now, when you get to the question why, it's always best to ask the person, not to assume. Because the word assume, A-S-S-U-M-E, makes an ass out of you and me. Assume. Okay? So if you ask the question why, and then you answer it for yourself, you know, he doesn't love me like he used to. He's cooling off. He doesn't want me anymore. He's found someone else. It just keeps growing and growing till fear just, well, the logical thing to do when he comes home today, walk up to baby, can I talk to you? Man, you used to come home, pick me up off my feet. I miss that. You miss that? Everything okay with us? You know, you're right. I've been letting too much stress in my life and work. Man, I'm glad you put your finger on that one conversation and you've got it fixed. Or your assuming goes on for month after month. Now, when you judge someone's heart, which is their motive and their intentions, this assumption makes you act differently to them. And when you act differently in front of that person, you get what's called sowing and reaping. You see, sowing and reaping isn't something that God enforces. Sowing and reaping is an earthly phenomenon. If you are going to judge someone, you're going to get judged back. And so, we've got to, now, let me read you this verse, Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 and 2. Do not judge, criticize, and condemn others, so that you may not be judged, criticized, and condemned yourself. For just as you judge, criticize, and condemn others, you will be judged, criticized, and condemned. And in accordance with the measure that you use to deal out to others, it will be dealt out to you again. You know that verse that says, in the other verses, given it shall be given, good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over shall men give into your bosom. It's actually a verse not about money. It's a verse about judging. So when you judge, you condemn and criticize if you're judging the heart. When you judge the heart, which is that center core, that seat of their identity, when you judge that, that person feels the condemnation. They feel criticized. And whenever, if I was to stand somebody up right now and stand them on stage, and I just started pushing them, what's going to be the immediate reaction from them? You push back. When you push, people push back. So when talking pushes, they push back. When talking becomes critical or condemning, that person instantly stands their ground and pushes back, even if it's true. Doesn't matter. You don't put your finger on truth and then criticize and condemn. And so this is the language that Jesus used. When he talked with somebody, he would literally say, neither do I accuse you. Go, sin no more. There was a language about Jesus that was so beautiful, so amazing. So when it comes to judging people, condemning people, criticizing people, now Luke chapter 6, verse 37, let's just put that up for a minute. It says, judge not, and you shall not be judged. Condemn not, and you shall not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Now, this is not talking about your relationship with God. This is talking about worldly relationships. Have you ever noticed that an unforgiving person, a person that does not forgive, has got more messes in their life than you could ever imagine? Like, it's like everywhere they go. It's because when they don't forgive, it's almost, there is this sowing and reaping thing that goes on amongst people that they won't forgive back. And everywhere they go, they get so sensitized to every little thing, they're sure it's about them. It's like this guy who had never been to a football game. He just stayed around the house very negative. Everything someone said hurt him. And so he thought, well, he should get out. So these guys got together. Let's take this guy to a football game. I mean, what can go wrong at a football game? This poor guy, he's a mess. So they get him to, they buy his seat and they sit down. And I mean, the kick goes off and they run it back. And then it's the first down. So all the guys get in a huddle. The guy looks like this, jumps up, and leaves the stadium. One of the friends chases him down and says, what's wrong? Where are you going? Where are you going? The guy says, you see all those guys out there huddled on the field? They're talking about me. When someone becomes judgmental, they just start getting it back, and everywhere they go, they see it, they sense it. Your heart is the seat of your identity. It's where you feel and sense. And by the way, it's not who you are that makes way for you in life. It's who you believe you are that determines your way in life. And so your beliefs are powerful. To change the way your life is going, you must change the core beliefs of your heart. This is biblical principles. Now, where should I go from here? The time I got, 10 minutes, okay. When we are in relationship, I'll just finish off where I'm going. I want to go in a lot of directions. In fact, I told the staff to make this ready and available out there. After this is a series that we did, a whole series on how to judge others. It goes through business, relationship, family, etc. And it's basically called How to Judge Others. You'd better learn how, because you need to. But if you do it wrong, you're going to destroy relationships. Now, example, when a teenager or a child in your home has a problem, how you deal with that problem and how you speak about to them, they're going to feel criticized and condemned, which, by the way, worsens the condition, okay? Because you're touching their identity. So when you look at a little guy and you say, you're a liar, liars go to hell. Now, you're thinking you're shocking him, you're scaring him out of lying, but really what's going on is his little brain's going, I'm a liar. I guess that's who I am. And you say, well, Leon, come on, they don't think that way. You ought to see the counseling offices of people all across this country and the things they're dealing with. The key to Christianity is that when you give your life to Jesus Christ, your identity changes. You know, some denominations believe you're just a sinner saved by grace. No, you're not. Your identity's not sinner. Your identity is saved, forgiven, child of God. Will you make mistakes? Yes. Will you do sins? Yes. Does that make you a sinner? No, because the word sinner is your identity. But that doesn't make sense. Hey, does sitting in a garage make you a car? No. Does sitting at McDonald's make you a Big Mac? No. Just because you fall into sin doesn't mean that your nature is sinner. Once you begin to believe your nature, that Jesus Christ has forgiven you, his blood was shed on the cross, that righteousness is a free gift to you, and you begin to believe these things, this identity of who you are rises up, and the power to break every addiction, the power to end sin, the power to live the way you've always wanted to live for God, to live right, it rises up in you when you know your identity in Christ. So our conversations and how we respond as married people and our families is crucial that we develop a language and that our intentions are that we deal with the issue, not look at the motive. In fact, you don't even have to ask that person a lot of times or try to get them to admit, you just think you're better than me, don't you? Okay, why do you need them to admit that? That's your insecurity more than it is their superiority. Remember that people feel inferior when they act superior. It's the truth every time. Every time. Anytime you meet someone that acts superior, they're condescending to you. They speak down to you. Every time there's an inferiority there. Because people who really are at peace with who they are in Christ, they just love people because the love of Christ is in them. And there's an ease to accept people the way they are. In our marriages, it is crucial that we learn the language of, because the person you're going to live with the most is a person you're married to. And you're going to see every one of their faults. You're going to see all the baggage. You're going to see all the fruit. You're going to see things no one else sees. And the enemy will begin to tempt you to diagnose them, to judge them, to put your finger on what they're like or who they are. And even if you're not, make sure that you deal with the issue, not with what you think is the motive behind the issue. Well, maybe in the last few minutes, let's do this. To get your marriage right now, and you say, well, Leon, that's not us. Okay, right there shows it is you. Okay, because there is no person in this building, including me, that has got this so figured out that I don't hurt people or offend people. Why? Because people each speak their own language. And because of your own hurts, you'll get hurt by things people don't understand. Okay, so if you've got an inferiority complex, just standing beside a good-looking person makes you feel inferior. Hello? So we've got to understand. Now, the Bible is beautiful. The Bible's amazing. It teaches us to look at the person's fruits, look at the track record, and it's talking about whether or not they are safe to be involved with you. Should you marry them? Should they babysit your little kids? Should you hire them in your business? All of these things are you've got to make judgments on. These judgments shouldn't be made foolishly, okay? But then at the same time, now, when we love somebody and they mess up, when we love somebody and they're just not there for us, when the relationship does go downhill, say, Leon, you made that analogy of a guy that used to come home and hug and kiss his wife. Okay, that's me. So you're saying I can't talk to him? No, what I'm saying is stop being silent, because your silence is making it worse as you judge him that he doesn't love you, there's something wrong with him. No. Just openly, lovingly talk to him, but talk to him in a way that's not condemning. Talk to him in a way that's not criticizing. Now, some of you have been trained to talk critically. You've grown up in a home that every word that comes out is, this is a fight to win this argument. So, that's how conversations start. Two loaded guns. One's got a shotgun. And all right, time to talk. Oh, just a minute. Okay, I'm ready now. Okay, that's how most conversations go, because it's all about who's going to win. Nobody wins. Nobody wins. Nobody wins. And so the best way to do it about it is to talk about behavior without being critical or condemning, which means you don't ever touch why they're doing it, because you don't know why. Only God knows the heart. So it would look like, baby, can I talk to you? If this is your wife talking to her husband now, you know, something's changed in the way he hugs her and kisses her and teach, and you say, babe, you know what? I was just sitting here and just enjoying some of the memories of how special you are and how you used to come home. You used to just hug me and pick me up. You remember those days? Yeah, you know, I want that back. I love you. I miss you. What can I do to just make... See, all of this language is dealing with the issue, but it's, you don't hug me like you used to. Is there someone at work? And you begin to accuse, you begin to criticize, you begin to put them on the defensive, because as you push, they have to push back to maintain their present position. Now, every day your conversation has to be like that. It's got to be like apples of gold in pitchers of silver. A soft answer turns away wrath. You've got to be developing your relationships like that so that it can be, he'll just look at you and say, honey, you don't have to do anything. Man, am I stupid or what? The best thing that ever happened to me. And that this is how the conversation is going to go. And you're going to solve it with loving conversation rather than critical, condemning confrontation. Okay? And now, how about our children? Children are the same way. Now, maybe you've got a kid that's walked because you had to deal with them. Maybe they were, I'm making these up, so don't, someone feel, who told, someone, did someone tell you about me? No. Maybe you had a 19-year-old and a 13-year-old and a 9-year-old, and the 19-year-old was doing things you don't want in your home, and you finally had enough, and he wouldn't listen to you, so you had to remove him from the home, and he won't talk to you, and it's been years, and he's been gone. You say, well, Leon, did I do the right thing? Oh, I don't know if you did the right thing. But if you tell me how you did it, I'll tell you if you did how you did it was right. Why? Because what you do, if it's attacking the heart, condemning or criticizing, then that person in the midst of this would have felt like their identity, that you have just moved them off as you a liar, you an addict, you the black sheep, I can't have you around my other kids. So it'll be done. So that could be true in situations. You might have to do that. Okay? But it's how. Have you touched the identity? Have you touched? Have you asked the question why and gone after his motives and his intentions? Or have you simply touched the behavior and said, I can't have this behavior? You understand. This is why I've got to raise my 9-year-old. This is what's going on. And so you talk in a way that deals with a situation. So what I have found is that more talking is healthier than less talking. You know what thinking actually is? Thinking. Now, thinking is asking yourself questions and answering. That's what thinking is. Okay? So, in your head right now, you just ask yourself, do I think and answer questions? In fact, it's almost impossible to think about your thinking. But that's what thinking is. You are judging everything all the time without fail, nonstop. Should he be wearing runners with that suit jacket? I don't think so. That looks cool. You know, your thinking is going somewhere all the time. It's always asking questions, answering, asking, answering, asking, answering, asking, answering, asking, answering. And that's what thinking is. So when you get God's word into your life and the principles of God's word and you renew your mind, you begin to ask the right questions, and you begin to answer the right answers, and your thinking becomes positive and exciting and fulfilled, and you can have the mind of Christ. You know, in the Amplified Bible, it says, who knows God's mind that we can judge him? But we have the mind of Christ. And in the Amplified, it says, we hold his purposes, his feelings, and his thoughts. That means that God's word comes in and it renews our mind. And we begin to just love people the way we are. The fact is that in a group of people this big, there's no way everybody in this room likes me. Okay? It's just the truth. Somebody got drug out by their spouse, kicking and screaming, or somebody else is just in the process of leaving us. And they're unhappy or they're upset, and they're sitting here. So now what do I think on while I'm doing this? Does everybody like me here? I mean, look at that guy back there. And so I'm continually judging, you know, do they like me here? Is this message going over any well? You've got to begin to make a decision. I choose to focus on what Christ thinks about me. I choose to focus right now. You know, public speaking is the number one fear in the world. You know why? Because when you get up on a stage, you are being judged instantly about everything you do, from your hair to your wear to your skin to your words to everything the person's heard about you, read about you in blog. Everything is in the mix. And so you're just getting judgment coming at you. And you have to just go, it's all noise. Whatever. God, who am I? God says, you're my son. Thanks. Yeah, you're forgiven. Thanks. Yeah, you can ride upon the high places of the earth, Leon. Thanks, God. Yeah, you go preach it, son. You go ahead and just tell my word. And yeah, but God, there's going to be people who don't like me. Yeah, it happened to me too. I mean, his son came and wasn't like. So you need to begin to back down from the worry of people's opinions. And then you're judging them. And when we begin to find our self-worth and our identity in Christ, and it's, you're going to be the most amazing spouse to be married to. You know why? Because everything they do doesn't touch one of your buttons. You learn. And everyone's got buttons. You know, when a couple get married, if you could see in the soulish realm, she doesn't walk down the aisle by herself. She's got a backpack full of stuff. She's got a suitcase under one arm full of stuff and two suitcases under this hand full of stuff. And she's walking down. And if you could really see all the soulless baggage that she's taking down into that marriage. Oh, not me. Yeah, you. And the groom's walking down. Dude, he's pulling a whole sled full of stuff. And he's coming down saying, gonna say I do any minute now. And baggage, everybody's got baggage. So then you get married and your baggage is mucking with each other and you're judging that person based on your baggage, but they're judging you based on their baggage and you're wrong every time. How do you do it? You go to God and you talk without criticizing or condemning. This is a relationship that will become so special because it's two imperfect people saying, I love you and I want to get to know you. And when we talk about stuff, I don't want to hurt you and criticize you. And by the way, when they feel hurt by something you say, be quiet and listen as to why. Because again, it's not what you say that you need to be cautious about. It's how they take it that you should be watching. We had one couple that I spoke with, and they were in counseling a number of years ago, and they were sitting in the office, and he says, yeah, well, she says, he doesn't talk to me at all. She goes, he grunts, pushes the remote control. I don't know what's going on in his head, his heart. He'll talk to me about stuff, but she goes, we don't have any good talks. And I looked at him, and I said, all right, really, is that true? Yep. I said, why not? Oh, I tried. I said, you tried? Yep. I said, well, what happened? Well, about 2 years ago, we went into the den. We have a love couch there, and we sat down. We're going to have a talk. So I started talking. I was sharing my guts, Leon. I mean, I was, you know, really talking, man. I was talking, man. I said, well, okay, that's good. That's good. Yeah, but you know what she was doing? I said, what was she doing? She was looking at me going, pfft. So I got up and walked out. I probably said a few choice words too. And his wife's like this as he's telling the story. She goes, you walked out because I was going, psh, psh, I did not, did too, did not, did too, did not, did too. So. Okay, what was she doing? I'm talking, I'm sharing my guts, Leon. And it's just, and you can see her brain's going a billion miles an hour because she hasn't had a good conversation with this guy in 2 years. And so I got him wired all down, and I said to her, do you think maybe you were? She goes, Leon, I wouldn't have. That I was so excited that man was opening up, I could have done cart flips. I'd have done anything to have that conversation keep going. And I backed him down. I said, now, talk to me. What was she really doing, Leon? I'm telling you, in our house, I know it when I'm feeling this because my mom and dad used to do that to me all the time. If you were saying something they didn't agree with, they just, pfft. So she actually was going, pfft. But she was, this is her way of concentrating. She'd hold her breath. You know when someone's really talking, you don't realize you're holding your breath? And then she kind of go, pfft. And he literally focused in on that because that's how his parents would like, if they didn't agree or didn't believe with you or pfft, baloney, it was like, pfft. And they both have been raised in different homes. This is a true story. And for 2 years, their marriage was hell because he judged her on going, and as ridiculous as that sounds, every marriage in this place, including mine, we make judgments like that all the time. Everything that goes on, based on our past, our previous hurts, the things we've come through, the stuff that's gone on, the greatest thing you can do is pray together. Ask God, help us. And then begin this journey of truly understanding that person. And so when they say, you know, Leon, or when your spouse says to you, you know what, every time you do this, I feel like this. Well, I don't care. That's not what I mean. But you see, understand that if that's how that person takes it, and that's how they're communicated to, and that's their soft button, that's what makes them get hurt, then you should probably be aware of it for a while. It might never get unwired. Okay, I mean, if the wife you married had a dad that put a red clown's nose on and then called her down or got drunk and abused her, don't think you're going to put a red clown's nose on and have a nice evening. Okay, her baggage says throw it away. Find some other way to entertain her. Am I helping anybody today? All right, our time is done. Judging. I really want to encourage you to get this series. It'll be at all the kiosks. And just flesh it out. There are 9 things that we taught in this series that'll help you understand how to communicate, how to judge in a way that will help you to take every relationship you've got, including business ones, to a new place.